Radio by students for students.
You are why.
How to Break a Radio Station, the podcast, is taken from a show broadcast live on URY. Therefore, whenever we ask people to message in via the website, you will not be able to do so. Bear this in mind as you enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to How to Break a Radio Station. I'm Alice Milburn, the Assistant Chief Engineer here at URY. With me I have Jess Schofield, the Chief Engineer.
Hello.
And Harry Smith, the Assistant Hello. Chief Engineer. And today, in episode one of How to Break a Radio Station, we're going to be talking about microphones.
We are indeed. Yes. I like microphones, do you? They keep us going.
Microphones.
Without microphones, they keep us going. Doing this.
Well, exactly.
Exactly. They are a fundamental very important part of radio.
Yeah. The premise of this show, for those of you listening, is that we at the engineering team know a little bit about what goes on around here.
Only a little, and we thought
it might be interesting to share some of that with you guys, because it could be quite mystifying, really, knowing how a lot of the things that we use on the radio work. And so here we are, URY's very own engineering team, here to demystify and that's what the show is, right?
Should we get started?
So yeah, why not?
Let's start talking about just basic mics and the things that how they work. Yeah. So a microphone is a transducer, and it converts like acoustic energy and pressure into electrical energy, and almost all mics do this by measuring the position of an element inside the microphone as it moves back and forth in response to pressure changes of the sound wave. The physical characteristics of a microphone, and in particular its moving element, have a huge effect on its response to sound, but each microphone also has its own circuitry and electrical characteristics, which makes every mic sound different.
And unique. And
Yeah. A lot of mics have their own sound, which means people prefer different mics.
There's two parts to this. There's the mics having their own sound, and there's everybody having their own ears. So I don't think you'll get the same opinion out of any sound engineer, broadcast engineer, as to which mic is the best.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, an opinionated field.
Yeah, it's entirely your own preference on which mics you like. And mics differ so much that there's so many different options for different situations and different instruments and what you're trying to record or broadcast. There are three different types of microphones that we're going to go slowly through throughout this show. There's dynamic, ribbon microphones, and condenser microphones. All microphones also have their own polar patterns, which makes them... There's such a variety of different types of microphones because of the polar patterns. Polar patterns refer to the sensitivity of any given microphone to sound arriving from different angles, so its central axis. The most common polar pattern you'll find in most microphones is the cardioid polar pattern, and that is highly effective at capturing a singer's voice, but would also block out sound coming around from the back of the microphone, so you're not going to get audience being picked up on a singer's microphone on a show.
Yeah, so you might say, well, why doesn't every microphone do that? Because surely you want the microphone to only pick up the thing that you're interested in recording. Like, you're recording a singer, you only want it to record them, you don't want it to record anyone else in the band. But say you're not recording a band and you're recording a singer in a church, you might want that mic to pick up more of a sense of space. So not only do you want the raw sound coming from the singer, but you also want to hear a bit of the reverberations coming back, bouncing off the walls, and coming at the microphone from different angles. So in that case, you perhaps choose a different polar pattern.
You are wise.
Harry, as it turns out, is not on the same course as me and Alice. He does computer science.
I'm not. I've committed the sin of being an engineer when I study computer science.
Yeah,
me and Jess do electronic engineering with music technology systems, so we do know
the
quite
mouth,
a bit.
The mouthful that is our degree title. Yes, we do do that.
Yeah.
So me and Alice have a little more sort of the theory behind microphones. Harry's got a lot of experience in using them, but for today, Harry is going to be able to question anything we say. Yeah. Ask about anything that you might understand. But if you two don't understand anything or would like us to go into more detail maybe in another episode about something, then please send us a message in via the website uri.org.uk, and we'll try and get back to you. Yeah,
we have had a message.
Ooh.
Enjoying the show from James. Thanks.
Yeah,
James.
That's my friend James. Hello. Thank you for tuning in.
Oh, okay. Oh, should we carry on?
Yeah, let's
Why
do
not?
So
let's go
on to dynamic mics. So dynamic mics use a very simple mechanism to convert pressure to voltage. A diaphragm is physically connected to a coil of wire, which is free to move over a fixed magnet. As pressure waves hit the diaphragm, it moves back and forth, causing the coil of wire to move over the magnet and an electrical current to be created in the wire. The voltage across the ends of the wire is analogous to the changing acoustic pressure, and this is our mic's electrical output.
I have a question. Dynamic what mics. Does analogous mean?
I was thinking the
so
same
that's,
thing.
I assume it's equivalent to equivalent.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what it means.
Well, we've
We're going to go with
calling
that.
Me out on my research. So equivalent, dynamic mics are very popular.
They are so popular. They're very hardy
as well.
I'm
using one now. Yeah. So
shall we discuss most... what we're all using? What does the URY Eng team broadcast with?
What I'm currently using now is an SM58, which is the most common dynamic mic I'm pretty sure you can get, because
ever.
They're just so robust. Mm. And
they offer
and they're very good microphones, and they're very useful for a lot of different situations.
Absolutely.
So
you can really push them to their limits and they probably won't break.
Having said
we've
that,
only
we've
broken
did.
One.
We've only broken one ever.
Yep, it's fine. And they can be pretty much dropped out of a helicopter and still work. And from the look of ours at the station, some of them do look like they've been dropped out of a helicopter.
They really do.
They've,
but
they've
they
been
still
through
work.
Some hard times.
Yeah, yeah. Jess, what are you using?
What am I using? What am I, the chief engineer of University Radio York, using to broadcast? A pair of headphones. That's
very nice.
That's as
works,
good as it gets.
Though.
It works. And if you're sat at home thinking, I'm a bit bored, I don't really know what to do this term when there's little else going on at the university, then have a think about doing a radio show. All you need is a laptop and a pair of headphones. And... that's it.
Yeah.
That's all the kit you need. So yeah.
Yeah.
Harry.
Hello. I'm using a condenser microphone. And it's the one that comes with the Focusrite Scarlett Studio. Now it's a very good microphone, but for some reason Focusrite don't sell it separately. So if you do want to buy
strange.
One, you're gonna have to buy the whole kit.
It's a nice mic though.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
nice.
And we'll
compare
we'll
it
to
my
to
old
condensers.
Microphone, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
But back to dynamics.
We'll come on to condensers a bit later. Okay, back to dynamics. They tend to handle very high sounds easily, but they can be... They do tend to gather little noise from being physically handled. So they are popular... Gather little noise from being physically handled. So they are popular as handheld vocal mics, particularly SM58s.
Yeah. Noise is always,
there
noise
are
always a
some,
concern.
Yeah,
how
there
much
are some downsides.
How much you're going to collect.
Yeah, there are some downsides to dynamic mics. Is they have a less smooth frequency response and a poorer response to sudden change in the sound level. But other than that, they're pretty good.
I have a question.
Go
is
for
frequency
it.
Response?
Ooh,
so frequency
I can...
response. Do you want to go, Jess?
Well, I've got a a little thing open about this, and it's how are the mic responds to the specific frequencies. So if you can imagine a chart where you've got frequency along the bottom and you've got like response in terms of gain, so like volume along the y-axis, then it's a graph, and you tend to want the graph to be as flat and as even as possible within the range of human hearing, so 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. So because if the mic's suddenly gonna get louder, if you're singing through a microphone and you sing a really high note, and every time you sing a high note the mic has a better frequency response for the higher end of the spectrum, then it's going to sound awful because suddenly everything high is louder than everything low, which is quite, it's not how we're used to hearing people if they're not being amplified through a microphone and speaker system. Does that explain?
Cool. Yeah, well, I understand it a bit more now.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Dynamic mics are often described as punchy, which is kind of unscientific, but the heavier capsule inside of them reacts slowly and takes more energy to move. Mics also suffer something called proximity effect, which is when you move closer to the mic. So I can demonstrate this. If I move really close to my microphone, I go quite a bit deeper. And that's proximity effect coming into practice. Some vocalists like it. Some engineers aren't a fan because it can kind of mess with the sound that you're going for. It just basically enhances the lower frequency.
If you're very close to the microphone.
Yeah, yeah.
I think part of the reason engineers don't like it is because there are some singers that for some bizarre reason like to sort of wave the mic around a bit, and then you get where sometimes they're singing and they're a good distance away from the mic, and sometimes they're singing and they're a bit closer, so you can't account for, if they keep changing, you can't account for that change, and so everybody's going to notice it. Whereas if somebody is always really close, then you can boost their high end a bit and sort of fix that.
You are why.
So we've had a question. How do you reduce crosstalk on headphones between sound for your own ears and what the mic's supposed to record?
Yeah, there's two things here. There's this person's actual problem, which is that when you're wearing your headphones, you've got the sound that you want to go into your ears, and then you've got the sound that you want the mic to pick up. You want your mic to pick up your voice only and not the stuff that's going into your ears, because the stuff that's going into your ears, especially if it's your voice, will cause problems, because then you'll get a feedback loop. Understanding what crosstalk is in a sort of broader sense, it is when you get sort of low level interference, and it really only becomes a problem when that interference actually becomes quite high in volume, and then you can't hear yourself over the sort of underlying noise or whatever else is there. It can happen quite a lot if you've got cables close together, because around each cable is a magnetic field, and if you've got two cables really close together, then those magnetic fields are going to interact with each other, and noise is going to be put on one cable. And that can happen in headphones sometimes, particularly when there's a shared ground. You can buy headphones with like separate cables for the purpose of reducing crosstalk. But here, I think what is being asked is how to reduce what's being picked up by the mic. So if your mic's picking up noise from your headphones, one thing is quality of headphones or in-ear headphones tend to be better, because the sound is absorbed by your head, and overhead headphones can leak a bit more, but also a good quality pair of headphones shouldn't be leaking too much too much noise. Another thing you can do is place the mic slightly closer to your mouth. And what that does is that it increases the volume of the thing that you want to hear, so that the thing that you don't want to hear is masked more.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think that's a pretty good
answer.
There
was a second message that said they think the asker meant to say bleed rather than crosstalk.
I think I've covered that.
Yeah. I think you
there.
Just a bit of
I've explained crosstalk and how to reduce bleed.
Yeah. We've had a message in to confirm that analogous does mean the same as. It's very exciting.
See my know-how?
I'm going to proofread my research a bit better.
They asked, have you considered doing a practical demonstration of each of the things you're talking about?
We'll try where we can, is the answer to that. We don't have all of the equipment we're discussing ourselves.
No,
but
we're all sat in our houses with the minimal equipment that we do have. Okay. To ribbon mics.
Indeed.
The principle of ribbon mics is pretty similar to a dynamic mic, but the element inside is very thin. It's corrugated metal ribbon suspended between poles of a magnet. A wire is connected to each end, and as the ribbon moves in response to sound, a voltage develops across it. They were actually the height of microphone technology from the 1920s to the 1950s, as they have a very good sound, but are very fragile. They have regained popularity in the past 20 years, which is quite nice, because modern ribbons are much more affordable and robust. They are sensitive microphones, especially to changes in sound level, as the element is so light inside. They respond less well at high frequencies, and their frequency roll-off is about 10 kilohertz, so that's when it
Shall I explain what a frequency roll-off is?
Go for it.
Yes, please, because I was wondering that.
Yeah, so the frequency response that we talked about before, in an ideal world, that frequency response would look like a flat line on your graph. But in the real world, you end up with lines sloping downwards towards the lower end of the frequency range and the higher end of the frequency range, and that is called roll-off. So if you're doing something at the very limit of the range of the high range, then you're gonna start to hear that sound getting quieter. That is just a thing about like physical limits. But that's what we mean when we say roll-off. We mean that section of reduced volume.
But that roll-off on a ribbon mic does give them a nice sound, and it's like a nice mellow sound.
Yes, we don't always not want roll-off.
Yeah.
As another confusing thing about mics is that sometimes you want stuff and sometimes you don't.
Yeah. But it depends on the situation a lot of the time, in what you want from your microphone and what you want it to pick up and what you don't want it to pick up. So they are useful. However, they are very fragile. You don't really need to even drop it to break it. You can just give it a hard knock and that'll kill it.
Or put it somewhere too loud. So one of the loudest things you might ever have to record is a bass drum. Do not put a ribbon mic in a bass drum. Very bad.
Absolutely not.
The pressure that mic will be under, because sound creates changes in pressure, and that would kill the little thin little ribbon.
Yeah, they are getting more durable though, with like modern technology, and so they are getting better. Their actual output level tends to be very low, meaning a high-quality preamp is needed on quiet sounds to maintain an acceptable noise level. Ribbon mics, due to their detailed response and high-frequency roll-off, are often described as warm or rounded, which, again, is a nice sound to have, and sometimes you do want like a nice warm sound, and you don't want it to pick up everything that it could pick up if it was like a dynamic mic. So that's the gist of ribbon mics. Should we move on to condenser microphones? River mics
are nice and warm. Yes, let's do.
They are. Okay. So condenser microphones are sometimes called capacitor microphones because that's basically what they are inside of the diaphragm. It's a thin metal film that forms one side of a capacitor. And a capacitor is a sandwich of two such films with an insulator between them. This capacitor is wired into...
Capacitor. Sorry.
English.
I was just going to say a little bit about what a capacitor does. Because
yeah, go for it.
It's something you only get taught in A-level physics. If you haven't done that, then...
No, I haven't.
You don't know what one is. And a capacitor holds charge. So... The very fact that the charge can't move from one plate to the other because there's an insulator between them means the charge has to stay there. So it's a way of storing charge.
Yeah.
Carry on.
The capacitor is wired into a simple circuit, and as the diaphragm moves back and forth in response to sound, the capacitance of the capacitor changes. So the capacitance is how much energy it can store. I think that's right.
It's the limit. It's the limit of how much. Yeah.
Yeah. So as the capacitance of the capacitor changes, so does the voltage across the positive and negative terminals of the circuit. The diaphragm size of a condenser mic can be made very small, which means very sensitive mics can be produced. Condenser mics are pretty good. In most respects, it's the diaphragm can be made extremely thin and light, and its physical shape and mounting make it very well across a range of frequencies. Make it behave very well across a range of frequencies.
Which means it's got a flatter frequency response.
Yeah. Hey. And it's super sensitive as well. Although the capacitance change resulting from the diaphragm movement is small, condenser mics feature a built-in amplifier, resulting in relatively low noise levels. So that's noise that it picks up from around.
That's one of the things about having to amplify something is that if you have to amplify something at a later stage, then that signal is going to have come through multiple wires where it will have picked up noise, and you are going to also amplify that noise. If you can amplify the signal as close to source as possible, then you're going to avoid going through very much circuitry and you're going to have less noise.
Absolutely.
You generally need to amplify most mics because the signal is little. It is a mic level signal, as we call it, and you need to make the signal line level for putting it into for putting it out your speakers, but also for putting it into your mixer. You tend to have an amplification stage before. Depending on the mixer, mixers these days often have the amp built in.
They are getting better mixing desks. A slight disadvantage of condenser mics is they require power, and that's supplied by the microphone preamp. Awesome. Most of the time, desks nowadays can supply the power, and it's called phantom power.
Ooh.
Which is
I love the name.
Phantom power is 48 volts, which gets sent to the microphone through the positive pin on the XLR,
which is the kind of cable
that connects most microphones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a good system to use. It's a good way of doing the phantom power because mics, like dynamic mics, which don't need phantom power, are pretty much unaffected by it. Ribbon mics are more fragile, so don't recommend.
Don't do what I did and plug a ribbon mic into something powering phantom power. Didn't end well.
No, not a good plan.
Yeah, some ribbon mics will be able to like stand it, but a general way to be safe, if you know that mic is a ribbon mic, even if you don't know what kind of mic it is, maybe check before you power it. The reason condensers need power is the preamp needs power. Because yeah. I don't know this. I'm guessing there's an operational amplifier in there, which, if you know what one of those is, and I'm not going to explain it because it's a big topic, that kind of amplifier needs power.
Yeah, yeah.
You are wise.
You're listening to How to Break a Radio Station. I'm Jess. I'm still joined by Alice and Harry.
Hello.
As it's our first episode, I might just say why it's called How to Break a Radio Station. The fear is that if we give the people too much power, if we let you into all of our secrets, that you will know how to break a radio station. That you will have that knowledge and that power. So please don't. But also, it's remarkably easy. There's so many buttons that you can press, and that would make something go wrong. And I'm very scared all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay though, because I can't actually access the studios and do that at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're closed.
Not at the moment. Yeah.
Shall I got something wrong. Techniques? I got something wrong about the last discussion. I thought that it was the amp that needed power and condenser microphones. Apparently, according to a listener, it is the capacitor that needs power, which actually also makes sense because you need to put the charge on the capacitor.
Yeah.
Carry on.
The need potential on one plate to induce the current. Thank you, listener, for correcting us on that.
Okay, yeah, please do correct us.
Techniques. Yeah,
We're not afraid of that. We are likely to get stuff wrong quite often.
Oh, definitely. Who's taking this section? Shall I go?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about mic techniques, which are pretty important because you can use a microphone wrong and won't get a very nice sound from it. So with a vocal mic, you want to keep the microphone fairly close to your face, but you don't want to be touching the microphone because you don't want to talk... You don't want to hit...
Kiss the microphone.
Oh, what's it called? The proximity effect, which we talked about earlier, if you get too close.
Yeah, you don't want to... So. You also don't want to get too close to the mic so that you actually end up physically touching it, because that's not the most sanitary thing. Particularly at the moment, if somebody else is using the mic muff... Then stay away. Stay away.
I guess at home it's fine, but please don't do it in the studios.
No. Yeah. microphones can be sensitive to noise from them moving about, particularly condenser microphones. So having a mic stand is really good and reduces that. And with condenser microphones, a lot of them come with a shock mount, which avoids them moving too quickly, and
it's that
they won't
thing that you see in all the old films of radio stations, is the sort of net of springy, it's elastic that holds the mic, and so if you like, it's like a shock absorber in a car. It's suspension, but for microphones.
I can confirm that my new mic, I am now using it in a shock mount, and it sounds so much better than when I first got it, and I tried using it without the shock mount, because the amount of noise that went into that was horrendous.
Yeah, because even if you just, like, accidentally knock it, it's going to wobble about. If it's in a shock mount, it's going to really reduce the amount that it wobbles and the amount of noise that it gets picked up by it. Pop shields and microphone muffs are really useful. I don't have one, but I need to get one. I know it's on my to-buy list. Well, I think, yeah.
You definitely don't need a pop shield, but it
does help, and it reduces the plosives that a microphone picks up. Plosives are like the harsh letters and syllables.
Plosives are things like puh and buh that sound explosive, hence the name.
And they like pop because it's like the lots of air is coming out of your mouth and it's hitting straight at the diaphragm inside the microphone. So having a pop shield really helps to reduce the plosives.
We've had a tip from our very own program controller, which is put a sock over your mic. Apparently that's working well for him. So you can putting a little something that is going to let most of the sound through, but just be a little extra bit of cushioning in front of your mic, even if it's a bit ad hoc, can help.
Yeah. And going back to polar patterns that we were talking about earlier, if it's a cardioid polar pattern, the microphone needs to be facing your mouth, as this is where most of the noise coming out of your mouth will be picked up. Now, this does depend on what polar pattern your microphone is, but if it is a cardioid polar pattern, you want it facing.
Fun fact. Fun fact about cardioids is that they're called cardioid microphones because if you imagine a polar pattern being drawn on a 2D circle, and you draw on that circle what parts of the circle the microphone's going to pick up, then the cardioid pattern looks like a little heart. Because it picks up what's in front, a bit of what's at the side, and then it doesn't pick up things from behind very well, and it looks like a heart. It's Valentine's Day. Use a cardioid. Polar pattern.
I think you might be waiting a long time until the next one.
Yeah. Valentine's Day is a while away.
Should have given us that advice a few months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
come on.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's talk about what mics we use in the station, which is not where we are right now. But
you might
we
be
will
interested.
Be, yeah, we'll hopefully be there in a few months. So in the studios, we use SM7B, which are professional dynamic vocal microphones, which are pretty much designed for radio and vocals. They have a cardioid polar pattern, which is useful when you're in a room of presenters. You want your mic picking up you, not everyone else.
If we do have loud old Alex Tells is in the room with you, as he is on another show I do, Almost Education. Listen to it on Wednesdays.
Plug.
If Alex Tells is in the room with you, you definitely want a cardioid polar pattern.
Absolutely. We also have mic muffs on them. We have nice branded mic muffs that say URY on them, which are lovely.
I love those.
All about that marketing.
I think we need to get some more of them.
Yeah, we should. We should have them for OBs as well.
Oh,
we could do it as a merch order.
Let's do it.
Let's get on to marketing about that.
Absolutely. For our OBs, we use SM58s, which is what I'm using now, because they're just pretty good mics and they're pretty... We want everything to be safe when we're on an OB, so having a mic that's
you're
not
unlikely
easily
to have
damaged...
Problems.
Yeah, and we can hand them out if we're getting people interviews on an OB. An OB is an outside broadcast, if you're unaware, so that's when we leave the station. We're technically doing an OB now, but this isn't our traditional OB when we're out with our big setup and speakers and everything.
Yeah.
We also have wireless mics, and we use Sennheiser EW100G4 wireless microphone system with 835-S. And I really like them. We've only had them... What, 3-4 months? 2 months?
It was sometime in February, I think, that we got them. So,
Does anybody know what our first wireless mics were?
They were T-Bone.
I think they were also Sennheiser.
No, they were.
I can't even say Sennheiser right, apparently. I say Sennheiser.
I can find out. Let's see how quickly I can find them.
I'll carry on then. They are dynamic microphones, also, which again is good because we use them a whole bunch on OBs. We didn't used to use our old ones a great deal because they weren't the best microphones, particularly towards the end of their life. And
we still use them though.
they weren't very wireless. We still do use them because it's nice to not have that cable when you're roaming around a field, wherever. But our newest wireless mics are very wireless, and you can pick them up from quite a way away, which is very nice. So we've been using the wireless mics a lot more on the latter OBs that we had last time. So if you saw us out and about, you might have noticed a wireless mic or two.
And it really helps having the wireless mics when we're interviewing people, because we can hand it to them very easily. I haven't found them. I thought they were in a document, the name of them. That wasn't right. They weren't in that document.
Okay, you carry on with the next bit.
But the T-Bone something. What's the next bit? We're going
what's
to
the
a
next
song?
Bit?
The stereo pair.
Shall we say our goodbyes, actually?
The stereo pair of microphones that we've recently got. We haven't used them yet.
We've used
a stereo pair of microphones.
I haven't even seen them.
I at least got them. Opportunity. Yeah, we got a pair of Rode NT5s, which are pretty classic stereo miking pairs, which is if you want to record something for the idea of getting like a nice recording of the stereo sound and getting a good stereo image, so you can tell exactly where everything is, where all the sound's coming from, then they're a very popular mic to use. You always want to have two mics, so we've got two of them. Hence they're called a pair, because they sell them in pairs.
I'm so excited to use them.
Yeah,
that's going to be
perfect for our concerts.
Yeah, when we broadcast concerts on the radio, that'll be good. We did use some of them last time we did the concert orchestra's concert, but they weren't ours. They were the department's.
Yeah.
So now we've got our own, and we can have even more fun with them because we're not worried about breaking them. Well, we are worried about
breaking them,
but less so.
I found the name of our old wireless ones. They were T-Bone DS16H, and they were wireless, and it's like two wireless mics and two receivers. Mm-hmm. They worked well. They still do work well. We still do use them when we just want that extra wireless mic or two. Now we have them, we may as well. Let's say our goodbyes. Thanks everyone for listening. Tune in next week when you can listen to us again.
We haven't decided what the topic is yet, but if you do want to suggest something, then you've got a few minutes left to message via the website.
Absolutely.
You are wise.